services that the telephone network afforded. And there are numerous people who thought the only way that voice will ever be successful is if it can support all of the same things the telephone needs to support. So, one of the big areas that has been very interesting is click to connect. And here the idea was you had a user at a web page, you'd like them to just simply be able to push a button on the web page and establish a call. Well, with SIP we can do that today. Dialing. How do you manage to dial an email address when you have digits and strings in it? How do you support all of the various intelligent network services, like call forward only if the line is busy, or call forward if it's not answered, or always call forward, or call hold, park, pick up, blah, 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 all of these things. Now, something that's extremely unusual, but it's considered absolutely essential for PBXs in Sweden, is this additional feature where you can basically tell the PBX that if someone calls to say and produce a message saying, I'm on vacation and will not return until the 31st of August in 2009. Yes, believe it or not, this is something that you'll only find Nordic PBXs offering because it's so common that users want to be able to leave these messages. The office is closed until 13 o'clock or something like that. Very few other places do you find all of this programmability, but these sorts of things are considered essential here. Then, of course, there's computer telephony integration so that whenever I get the voice call, I get the customer records at the same time. There's high reliability, and one of the problems has been if I had a voice over IP telephone and the power goes out, does the telephone work or not? Well, with power over Ethernet, it's possible that I can actually send power to it, provided I provide power at the switches for this, much like a telephony network does. Both personal and device mobility, phone number portability, and emergency services, things like E911 or 112 services, and how do we manage this geographic location. But before we go deep into the services, it's important to distinguish between two sets of features. The first set are called the calling features, and these are activated when a call is placed. And the others are called features, and these are activated when a call would arrive potentially at the target. Okay, and the problem is that things like call blocking and call return, those happen when the call takes place. But these sorts of things, like call screening, call for, have to be set up before the call is ever made, because we don't know until the call actually arrives that we're going to do them, but we have to configure them in advance. And we have to configure them whether anyone ever uses them or not. Right? So if I set up call forwarding and no one calls me, I just did all of that configuration setting up the call forwarding and it might never be used. Okay, and in my case it's very easy because at KPH I don't have a phone. And so the result is I don't have to worry about most of these sorts of services. It's a much simpler approach. But if you have a phone, then setting up these things in advance, doing these configurations in advance, can be quite a lot of work to do that well. And the more features that you add that you might want to configure in advance, the more time you have to spend doing it or the more complex it becomes. So has anyone ever seen, for the Consono switches like the ones used here at KPH, how to set up your phone to say, you know, I'm out to lunch, I will return at 1300? Anyone ever do that? Well, you have to have this whole list of commands, because the only thing you have is this little keyboard, which is the normal telephony dialing pad. And so, you know, you'll have pound, asterisk, 7, asterisk, blah, 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 and then 13. And then when you come back from lunch, then you have to dial, you know, asterisk, asterisk, 7, asterisk, 9, 2, asterisk or pound or something like that. Right? It's horrible from a human user point of view. But what happens if I take those services over and I put them into a VoIP setting? Does it become so difficult to set these parameters? No. I can even make it so that I integrate my Pocket calendar and scheduling system with my call processing proxy so that it knows which hours I'm in class and automatically does it. I don't have to set up something special just before I go to class. It can just say, oh, he's scheduled in class, fine. Here's the message that he wants to give out when he's in class. And if I want to set things up, I can get a very nice screen and I can type or poke or whatever. So this limitation of the number pad makes many of these service configurations very difficult. But it's important, as I say, to remember, these happen at the time of the call, these happen when it would be the target of a call, and therefore any configuration has to be done in advance. Now, as we mentioned this morning, one of the features that's very popular today is presence, and of course another is instant messaging. And of course, presence is really about who is available. I'm trying to reach this person. What's the point in calling them if they're not available? Or, where are they? I want to reach this person, and I want to reach them only when they're in the office. I don't want to reach them when they're on vacation or it's their day off and they're out sailing on their boat. Or, I only want to reach them if they're not busy in another call. So yes, they could get the tone saying that there's another call coming, but I don't want to bother them then. Do they want to be available or not? What's their preferred media? So do they want text messages, email, voice, video, whatever? And for the preferences, we have both the caller and the callee preferences, and one of the things is there a place to meet in the middle? So one of my students a number of years ago, she did her licentiate work looking at, I would like to be able to make sure that if I call my boss is not angry. Yes, she wanted to be able to have emotional annotations about presence. Because obviously, if you call your boss and they're very angry because they just got off a call hearing that they have to fire 50% of the employees, it's not the time to call saying, I want to meet to talk about getting an increase in my salary. Right? That's a bad idea. Now, how did you figure out that the boss was angry? Well, there are ways of being able to detect such things. Increased voice stress, the fact that they just picked up their phone and threw it against the wall, if we refer to adolescents working on Wall Street. They may be 50 or 60 years old, but they're still adolescents. We can look at the behavior of people. And so a good secretary in the personal world observes his or her boss' emotional state and does things differently depending on the person's emotional state. So, for example, if the person is very stressed because they're about to go into a meeting, it's probably not the time to call them if you want to discuss something which isn't related exactly to that meeting. Right? So this business of using other information, nowadays we would think of this all as context information, is incredibly important. Now, Reuters, a big news agency, has deployed SIP-based instant messaging to support 50,000 users a week. IBM's NoteBuddy handles 315,000 employees, and they're trying to integrate messaging with instant messaging, email, voice, and other communications into the system. Now, why integrate all this into one system? Well, it turns out if your assistant is able to watch your messaging, read your email, listen to your phone calls, and know who you're talking to, it can build a model of who are the people and what are their relationships to you, and therefore prioritize which call is more important than another automatically for you. So anyone belong to things like Facebook, other sorts of social networks, right? Okay, what's one of the advantages? Right. So today there are people who are connecting a computer-based agent to Facebook to figure out who your friends are, so when you try to communicate with them, it can treat them differently than people who aren't your friends. And you didn't have to sit down and say, okay, my friends are John Doe, Mary, okay, not a friend anymore, okay. Because people don't like to do that. So automatically mining social networks to create input data to be used to create new services is a new business area. And of course, in the case of IBM and some other companies, Hewlett Packard and others, by data mining this information, you can actually, in the case of Hewlett Packard, go to the equivalent of the corporate library. You can say, I'm looking for an expert on instant messaging and pocket size devices. Who's the person in the company who's the expert in this? That's the person I want to call. And it can figure out who that person is for you and set up a call to them. Really amazing, right? It's sort of Google on steroids, except inside the company, using the information about who are the experts in the company on that topic, because you gained all of that information from the communication that the users already had. Yes? Yes. Yes. But in general today, we don't have good integration, for instance, with CRM system, with customer relations management systems, and these communication systems. But it's clearly coming. And there are obviously companies trying to do that. Because the more information that you can have, the more information you can utilize in making decisions, should I take this call or that call, my next call should be to this person or that person, the better off the company operates, the more efficient that you are. So presence-enabled services include things like complex call screening. We talked about some of this. Join an existing call. So one of the interesting things here is we need to have a discussion about, let's say, a project that we're involved in. I'm in Stockholm, you're in San Francisco, Abu Dhabi, and Sydney, Australia. Okay, when do we have this phone conference to discuss it? That's very, very difficult to do today, right? In part because they're all different time zones. At least I hope I picked them all right, so they're different time zones. So when are we all awake that we can actually be in a common conference? Well, okay, there's a few times, maybe a few hours very early in the morning here or very late there, but we're all actually available or could be available. So one of the things you can do is basically say, when all of this set of people are available, set up a phone conference for all of us. Connect us all in. We need 15 minutes or something like that. And the system can automatically set up that conference. We didn't have to plan it. Right? As hopefully all of you know, planning a meeting of more than two people is almost impossible in a company. And lots of new services that are not yet invented. So services are one of the incredible areas, and presence-enabled services and context-enabled services are very, very important today. To build that, SIP has defined what they call the SIP messaging and presence leveraging extensions, or SIMPLE, as a way to be able to do things like, if I'm waiting to be in a conference with someone else, I can subscribe to their presence agent saying, okay, when Olaf is available, I want to set up a call to him. And so the result is, when he's available, I get a notification, And if I program my agent correctly, it can automatically set up the call if I'm also available, and voila, off we go. I didn't have to send a message saying, when you're available, send me a note and I'll call you. Well, there's three major alternatives for voice over IP. And now we're going to start digging deep into the protocol. We can use the signaling concepts from traditional telephony, and that's what's used in the ITU standard, H.323. We could use the control concepts from traditional telephony, and that's what's used for things called soft switches. Or we could use an internet-centric protocol, and that's what's used in SIP. And basically, the idea here is we change from the idea of calls between handsets to sessions. And the interesting thing here is now that sessions, instead of being between handsets, can be between processes on any platform anywhere in the internet with both control and media content in digital form, and hence it can easily be manipulated. That means we don't need a separate voice network. We've got now an open distributed state model where we have both control and media that can be manipulated, and events are no longer restricted to the start and end of calls. So what kind of events could you have occur? Well, you could have an event that occurs in your calendar that says, aha, it's time I have to leave and go to class. Therefore, I need to finish up this call and go on and do something. Or maybe it means divert my incoming calls automatically for me because it takes me 5 minutes to get from this building to that building. So again, it isn't, I don't have to wait till I get to the room to push the button to divert it. I can say, no, while I'm rushing there, I don't want to be disturbed to incredibly complex modeling of the person of when is the right time to deliver the call. And the events can also be arbitrarily complex. And you can think about that for projects. However, there are, of course, some negatives. One of the problems is the technology is very new, and thus upgrades are going to be frequent, and that's going to take time and effort. The other problem is PBX has generally lasted typically 10 years, and public exchange is 30 years, but voice equipment is mostly computer equipment, and therefore it has the amortization time of 3 years. Now you could view it the other way, saying, hey, this is really, really good, right? If I get to replace my equipment after 3 years and my competitor only gets to replace their equipment after 30 years, guess who wins, right? Because I can upgrade and replace and modernize my infrastructure many, many times before my competitor is going to be able to change it once. Right? And if the important thing is increasing my productivity or increasing my customer's productivity, even against the PBX, you do very well with voice. So, while it's a negative, it might also be able to be a positive. Now, we talked about deregulation earlier. Deregulation doesn't mean no regulations. In fact, there are new regulations. So this by John Sununu, really trying to say that voice providers should be free from state regulation, free from the complexity of FCC regulations, and free to develop new solutions to address social needs, and free to amaze consumers. And this has been an interesting change, which is to say, let the technology develop. Don't put too many restraints on it to begin with, otherwise it isn't going to develop these new services. Because if you start to put lots of constraints on it, then it starts to get burdened down and becomes very difficult to change. So, for example, today my wife and I still have the privilege of paying taxes on telephony in the U.S., and the tax was put in place by Congress to pay the cost of the Civil War. Yes. So one of the difficulties is that if you have something that large numbers of people pay, like for telephony, or in Sweden for the ability to receive television, it becomes an easy place for government to attach taxes, right? Because lots of people are paying it, but we can write the legislation as if it really isn't a tax. It's just a tax on telephony. And that's not a general tax. It's just a tax on 98.7% of the people. But that's not a general tax increase. Okay? So today, if I look at a telephone bill in the United States, the amount of taxes and fees exceeds the cost for the service. Yes, a frightening thought. Of course, if you're used to Swedish taxes, you say, ah, only 50%, that's not so bad. Right? But a problem becomes, governments become addicted to taxes and the revenue that they get from, they don't want it to change. So a major problem is, as VoIP starts to take the revenues out of traditional VoIP services, at some point the consumers, like me, said, I don't want it anymore. I don't want to pay all of these fees. I can buy a prepaid SIM card and make calls whenever I want, should I ever want to make, and it'll be cheaper than paying all of these taxes. So this is an important thing here, is don't load it up with too much regulation, particularly too early. Now, Magnus Huisted and Oscar Bergqvist wrote a very nice thesis report called VoIP Regulatory Issues in June of 2003. So although it's getting a bit dated, you'll recognize that early on, and they did this work for PTS, there was a lot of interest in, gee, what's going to happen for VoIP in Sweden? What regulation should we have and what regulation shouldn't we have? And it's still, not surprisingly, an active issue. Another thing that has occurred is telephones are increasingly programmable. So you have Symbian phones, Java phones, Linux phones, etc. And of course, one of the big things here is this really avoids lock-in, because now I can run whatever applications I want on it. And some of you probably know Google has introduced this thing called Android, and the result is there's the Open Handset Alliance project, and basically the idea is that anyone should be able to produce applications for these devices. So you can run whatever end services that you want with whatever kind of interface that you want. You can integrate it with your browser, your calendar, etc. This is really shaking the world up. Okay, yesterday I was to a talk with one of the speakers was Kjell Gustafsson, who's the manager for systems at Ericsson Mobile Platforms in Lund. And one of the things that he talked about is, why is it that this device you call a cell phone has today the ability to play audio, entertainment audio, MP3s, whatever, has a camera in it, where now the cell phone manufacturers produce far more cameras than the sum of all camera manufacturers already 5 years ago. Why are you putting all of these things in this device that most people think of as a cell phone? Why do that? Why do things like even put VoIP clients in this thing that you think of as a cell phone? Right. And more importantly, it turns out, and I have to get my example one here to show, it turns out that basically there's this problem about pocket real estate. Right? The difficulty is we only have so much room in our pockets. Purses, backpacks, whatever. Right? And the difficulty is, if you're not on this device and ending up in that person's pocket, you won't be there. Right? Because you just displaced the something else that could be there. Right? So my ability to carry a full-size digital camera and a cell phone in my pocket is pretty small. Right? I can carry one or the other, at least in that pocket. At some point I run out of pockets. Right? And it's a very interesting way of thinking about this problem. So the cell phone vendors, or in this case, the people providing chips to the cell phone vendors, want to be able to say, hey, you have this one device, and you're going to carry it for this set of purposes, but we also make it do all of these other functions because you're carrying this one platform. So it really isn't the phone anymore. It's the thing I carry that does all of these different services. And the more services it does, the more valuable it is to me. And the more I make those services integrate with each other, again, the more valuable it becomes. Okay? So if you're in certain parts of the world, such as in Tokyo in Japan, you can take this device, and when you get to the public transit system, what do? And you walk through. Because they use near-field radio built into the device to electronically pass the ticketing information to the turnstile. How much is that worth? A lot of money. Why? Because the person doesn't have to carry a separate ticket. We don't have to print separate tickets. We don't have to deal with a separate infrastructure. Now, I asked the same person, who happened to be seated beside me at the meeting, why he had a separate little calculator in his pocket to print out security codes, display little security codes, so he could dial into the company's virtual private network. I said, why don't you integrate that into the phone? He said, yes, we have done that. You can do it, and you can get it back by an SMS of the PIN code to put in to authenticate yourself right now. Okay, so the more of those things you integrate, but it also means that now that you can program those services yourself, any of you can invent new services for that. And they can be integrated with the ability to communicate in both directions, to do local computations, to provide security, to do transformations from one code to another, and you can do it all in the device that you carry around with you because it combines computing and communication. Now, what happens if I can't do the communication and I can only do computing locally? Okay. Since I learned earlier no one is here from France, we'll pick on French for the moment. France was very, very successful early on with smart cards. And the reason why France was so successful with smart cards is because the telephony system in certain parts of the country was so bad. And the problem was, if you went into these shops and you tried to use a credit card reader that would call up the company to get an authorization to say whether or not the credit card company would pay you the money for what the customer is buying, it might not work. So by making a smart card, the idea was you put the computation locally, it could locally sign, yes, up to this amount of money, trust me, I'm a valid card, and you would do the security exchange. And all of that was done because communication was expensive or difficult. But what happens if I make communication the norm? Then do I need smart cards? Anyone know? No, I don't need a smart card. What happens to credit cards and credit card fraud? It disappears because there's A, nothing to steal from me, and B, anyone trying to use it is going to have to prove that they're me, and the revocation of that can happen instantly. There are no lists of revoked cards and so forth to process. It's in the database.
Yes.
That's correct. So it depends upon being able to establish the security. But if I don't have connectivity, then having secure communications doesn't matter. So today, one of the neat things that's happening is because of this integration of these different things, of computing and communication, it's shifting who the players are and how we do these things. And again, there's vast amounts of money in that. But since now you can start to put it into your handset, guess what's happened? Well, viruses now become a threat to smart cell phones. Right? So now, if the user is carrying around this thing that can serve as their ID, their wallet, their transit card, et cetera, what do? Well, I attack that thing because then I get all of those advantages. Right? And it's becoming an issue. Anyone here been bluejacked yet? You know about bluejacking? Right? Lots of cell phones have built-in Bluetooth. Well, it's possible to send messages to a cell's Bluetooth receiver and basically break into the phone via the Bluetooth link. In some phones, it's possible to do this even if the user thinks they have the Bluetooth turned off. Yes. There's a company now introducing something that they call the CIS. Cell phone seizure investigative system. And this is designed so that if the police arrest you and they take your cell phone from you, they can plug this device in and dump out all of your call data records, all of the contents of everything you have stored in the cell phone, etc. And you will have no idea that they've done that. So it leaves no trace. What a great thing for identity and other sorts of fees. Yes, they're available a mere $1,290 or something like that, and voila, off you go. So attacking these sorts of services and devices is becoming a big area. Similarly, the police on the other side using it. There are lots of conferences about voice over IP. One of them is called Voice on the Net, organized, as I mentioned, by Jeff Bolger. There's something called SIPIT, and basically these are interoperability tests, and one of the important things is they're closed events, and you can't say what the results were. And that's basically to encourage people to try things out and know that if they fail, they're not going to face public embarrassment. Because interoperability is so important, or is perceived as so important. And that's one of the reasons at KTH that projects from this course and from Thesis Project, we've tried to have the open source and public, because now people can interoperate, test against that, even though they're developing a proprietary closed product. They can test interoperation with this software, someone else can test interoperation, and now the probability that if they go to SIPIS, the two things will work together has gone way up. All right. However, it's not without problems. It's not a smooth transition. And today, one of the very interesting areas is called spam over internet telephony, or SPIT. Right? So if you think annoying spam mail was bad, which is most of my mail these days, think of what happens if now someone starts sending spam over IP telephony. The phone keeps ringing and ringing and ringing with all of these offers. Wouldn't you like to enhance your maleness or femaleness or, you know, whatever? You've just won €1 million. You don't want any of that. So how do you manage to filter it out? Well, you can take my approach, which is don't answer the phone at all, ever. Or you need to have some smarter agents in there to be able to deal with it. Denial of service is becoming a big problem today. So there are some people who have shown that if done cleverly, with computers to support it, sending SMSs in an area, let's say, like Manhattan, you can basically bring all cellular telephony services to a halt. Now, why is that? Well, it turns out that SMSs get sent over the control channels of the cellular network. And if the control channels are busy, they can't be used to set up calls. So what do? You simply flood the system with bursts of SMSs, which now block the control signaling, and now nobody can set up calls. And the shocking thing was to find out in a paper about a year ago by a group from Penn State University that it didn't take very many computers to be able to generate these messages to do that, because these other systems were simply never dimensioned for it. So denial of service. How can you basically attack someone and prevent them from any useful communication? And how do you prevent it? At the end of every chapter, there are loads of references. You can read all about it. And I want this quick acknowledgement to Henry Sinreich and Alan Johnson for some wonderful pictures, and to Ulf Thromgren from Cisco for one of the pictures of the Cisco phone. So as I say, when you write your references, write complete references so somebody else can find them later. Okay, so let's take a look at the details now. We've seen the high-level picture, we've seen how things fit together, we have lots of motivation. Now, let's compare traditional telecom on the left, datacom on the right. So we have circuit switch versus packet switch. In the traditional telecom, we standardize the interfaces. In datacom, we standardize the protocols and the packet format. There's lots of internal state, whereas in datacom, we maintain basically almost no internal state, although we may do some caching. Very long setup times. In the datacom case, we have the end-to-end argument. It's the nodes at the end, not the network. In this case, services are built into this network. In this case, anybody makes services. We have centralized control here. We have no central control here. And in terms of reliability, we have carrier class equipment, and the target is 99.999%. That's 5 minutes a year of unavailability. And all equipment links and everything have to operate at this very high availability. Whereas in the case of datacom, the backbone has pretty high availability, local network somewhat less, but in aggregate, because these things all don't depend on each other, the aggregate availability is extremely high. Very slow changes, very fast changes. A clear operator role, as we talked about, in many cases written into the law, and in this case, it's not even clear who an operator is or what they do. Now, some would say that this has been both a blessing and a curse. Is Moore's law doubling? Right? How is it a blessing? Well, the advantage is that price performance doubles roughly every 9 to 18 months. So things that used to be a problem are not a problem today. However, that brings us another problem, which is many other things didn't dimension similarly. And there we can have a really big problem. So, okay, how many of you have MP3 players? Okay, how many have an MP3 player with 4 gigabytes or more of storage? Okay, so how long does it take you to fill your MP3 player if you download it over your 3G subscription?
Too long.
Really, really long time. Right, if you have an 8 gig MP3 player and you have the current 7.2 megabit per second or so high-speed 3G subscription, it takes 46 hours to download the content to fill it. Right? It's not practical. Right? However, if I have 8 gigabytes or 4 gigabytes of local storage, what just changed? I have enough audio to listen to for days, right? Which means I don't need to be downloading audio to play via the handset in real time, right? So the dream that lots of cellular operators had about streaming media as being the way that they were going to make lots of money. Oops. Doesn't make any sense. Why? Because when did you fill up your player? Well, you filled it up when you were at your broadband connection. You blasted it in at, you know, several megabits per second, filled it up, boom, off. Now you didn't need connectivity at all. Right, so already a few years ago with some students here, we wrote a paper saying that we could put all of the FM radio stations in Stockholm out of business and yet still be able to provide the station announcements, the disc jockey announcements, the news announcements, etc. in the spare capacity that's wasted in the current GSM system. What do I mean by spare or wasted capacity? Well, because we need to be able to support users moving from one cell to another, not all of the radio resources are allocated all of the time. In those little bits here and there, that turns out to be enough to grab the digitized audio of the disc jockey saying, this afternoon's conference is going to be blah, 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 you know, or the advertisement or whatever they're putting in. We don't have to stream that down. We get the data. And now between the songs, we play that data. Right? So by breaking this mapping between strictly real time, as I receive it, I have to play it, to I burst it down and now I can play it later, suddenly do I need lots of connectivity all the time? No. So this dissertation I mentioned that will be presented later this month by Aurelian Bria says I can even do that for watching video by my DHB-H handset. As I move around, even though I'm going to move in areas where I won't have connectivity, because I've loaded up enough connectivity that in the time I'm in the shadow I can play it out, and if I don't have content I go to the cellular network and I download the extra data I need to be able to play it out. Okay. So suddenly it means I can support a service over an area without actually providing coverage over that whole area. Pretty slick. Right? But not what the broadcasting industry was prepared for. Not the answer that these people over here were expecting. Okay. Let's look at another feature, this 99.99% availability. Anyone remember the storm Gudrun, which happened in southern Sweden a couple years ago? Okay, so can that telephony operator in our lifetimes ever achieve 99.99% availability? No. Why not? That's right. And the problem is to get back up to these sorts of availabilities, I did the calculation, and it will be something like more than 1,000 years if they never had another single moment of failure. So although the telephony people like to talk about these high levels of availability, in reality, they don't really achieve them. So don't be put off when people tell you, oh no, it's not reliable enough, it's only 99.99%, so 4 nines instead of 5 nines. We could never think about using that for a serious service, right? So you have to go to us, the guys wearing the bell-shaped hats, to buy your service, because no, it doesn't always work there either. And so by using interneted systems, it's the aggregated availability that's important. Gee, that network goes down, but this other network didn't. So in fact, I still managed to have the connectivity that I wanted. So we'll take a break for 10 minutes, and then we'll come back and dive deep into the protocol details. Unless you insist that we just should just go off. Do you want a break or not? You want a break. Okay, so see you in 10 minutes.
quarters on
that.
Thank you.